Time to take a look at your lawn on this edition of Garden Talk. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Pleased to have as a guest today Doug Soldak. Doug is a turf grass and urban soil specialist, assistant professor in the Department of Soil Science in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Back and by the way, Doug, are you Extension too as well?
Yes.
Yeah, UW Extension. I want to get that in there as well. So he's making it. Boy, it's been a while. It was, say, last September maybe or October,
so, yeah.
Somewhere in there, the last time you were here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's back because if your lawn looks like mine, it's almost time to take some action with it, or maybe it is already time to take some action. So, have a question about your lawn, give us a call, 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. And as we think about our lawns, of course, southern Wisconsin is going to be a little different than northern Wisconsin, I expect, but what are some of these first of the season thoughts that you have about lawns?
Yeah, well, right now is about the time to start thinking about it. We're just getting to the point now where the grass is greened up, definitely down here in southern Wisconsin, and I've heard northern Wisconsin is right behind us this year. So you don't want to do too much before the grass starts growing. Dead spots in the lawn, or what you think are dead spots, are common, can be caused by snow molds, which don't really kill the plant. They'll kill the leaves all the way down to the crown, but if you just wait for the soil to warm up and the grass to start growing, you'll see new leaves start to emerge. So sometimes taking action too soon, you can actually end up doing work that you just would let
didn't
time
have to
take
do.
Care of.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some snow mold on our lawn, and my wife's been asking about that, and I've been putting it off.
That's right. Patience. It'll come back.
Patience. Hugh in Fort Atkinson has a question for you. Hi, Hugh.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've got a question reference lawn treatment for grubs. When I go to dig in the yard, I'll find the white grubs from the June beetles, and I'm wondering at what point do you determine when you should apply something to the lawn? And the other question relating to that is does that affect other creatures in the soil? Like, does it kill out the earthworms, which I seem to have an abundance of, too?
Yeah, so white grubs are sometimes are difficult to identify, but usually the best time to treat for white grubs is in July. And so what's going to happen now is you have these big fat grubs that have overwintered, and they're ready to, they'll emerge soon. They'll go through their adult phase. They'll lay larvae in the soil in midsummer, and then that's the best time to get the next batch. But right now, treating for those grubs is going to be wholly ineffective. What you do put down will affect some of the other organisms in the soil. Depends on what type of product it is, whether or not it'll be hurtful to earthworms. I can't say. So just hold off on the grubs until summer. For now.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Hugh, for calling. Rick in La Crosse. On to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hi there. I'm living in La Crosse. Have a lawn that gets lots of shade. Begins the year with lots and lots of moss, followed by dandelions and some daisies that grow up. I don't want to use fertilizers or things that are harmful for the environment, but wonder about what's the easy ground cover to take care of a lawn that's pretty much gone.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if grass doesn't like a lot of shade, and if you try to grow grass, you end up just putting in a lot of time and money into it, and it usually doesn't work anyway. So some good alternatives to grass: evergreen ground covers, things like bugleweed, English ivy, European wild ginger, pachysandra, periwinkle. Those things tend to do well in some of them in shade. There is a list of these on the University of Wisconsin Learning Store website, a publication called Growing Grass in the Shade, and it has a whole list of shade tolerant ground covers that you can use.
Some of them are a little better, I assume, on for if you've got heavier traffic. Because a lot of those, if I'm not mistaken, don't take traffic very well.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of the ground covers, is that they behave more like ornamental plants. They don't tolerate mowing or grazing or traffic. So it's a good if you can put these areas in places where you're going to keep the traffic off of them. Vinca is another one that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Rick, for calling. Joan in Campbellsport. Hi.
Hi. A great timely topic. My lawn is, I have a small yard, and my lawn is lush and green and lovely. I cut it long. I put Milorganite on it once a year. But each year for the past couple years, it's gotten very bumpy and lumpy. And when I go over it with the lawnmower wobbles all over.
Oh, boy.
So what causes it and what can I do about it?
Lumpy lawn.
That's a tough one. I don't know. It could be caused by, I guess, a lot of different things. Maybe animals in the soil burrowing. Boy, what will you do about it? I don't know. I don't know if it's that big of a problem that you'd have to actually take action to it. Maybe mow in different directions. Maybe by mowing in the same pattern, the wheel traffic is causing the lawn to be lumpy. So changing the mowing patterns.
That could help. What about going through and, I'm trying to think of the term, where we take the plugs out of the soil and what's the term?
Aerification.
Aerification. Good grief. I can't believe I couldn't remember that.
Yeah, aerification would be an option, you can give that a try. What that does is pull plugs of soil out, and it'll put them on the surface of the grass. And if you do that, maybe for 2-3 years, eventually you'll get a smoother surface. So you could give that a try.
I know that some I've actually done that on my own lawn, where I've had some low spots or here and there, and then you go through with the aerification, and then you can kind of move those plugs around a little bit with a rake, and then it really doesn't take long for those to kind of disappear.
They break down, right, and they fill in the low spots. Yeah, aerification is a good option. There's lots of lawn care contractors that'll come in and do that for you too if you don't want to do it yourself.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll try it.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling, Joan. Appreciate it. Bob in Wauwatosa, on to you.
Good morning. Good morning. I've got a question about early fertilization of our lawn, and I'm wondering if there's anything to be gained by using a blend of fertilizer, that is, not putting down just the standard NPK mixture of 33 and 3, but putting down maybe half that fertilizer and half starter fertilizer, you know, something like the 24, 3, and 12 higher in potassium, or is that working at cross purposes?
Well, what you want to do first before you can answer that question is have your soil tested. So you can send in a soil sample to the University of Wisconsin Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory. For $15 or $20, they'll tell you how much phosphorus and potassium is in the soil, and they'll tell you how much you should add, if any. So doing that will really determine whether or not blending or using a different analysis would be helpful. In most cases, it's not helpful. Usually grasses are very efficient with phosphorus and potassium, and adding those tends to be unnecessary in most cases. But you really need to have your soil tested before we can answer that.
Where are the instructions on how much soil they need and so forth?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Where are the instructions?
If you have access to the internet, they have sheets that tell you how to take and submit a soil sample. Generally, they need 1 to 2 cups of soil.
And you can go, is it on the Learning Store?
Yeah, what's the website?
It's if you go to University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store, I think it's learningstore.uwex.edu. Yeah.
Okay.
There'll be a lawn care button that you click, and then it'll say sampling soils for lawn and garden. Also, if you type in Wisconsin Soil and Plant Analysis Lab, they will have publications that talk about how to take and submit the sample, the same publication.
Yeah. Okay, so it's UWEXEDU, and is that the same general website where I can find, as you mentioned before, a list of shady area ground covers?
Yes.
Same place?
It's the Learning Store.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure we've got the right address for you, so stay listening.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. I don't know why I always have trouble remembering that, but we'll get the correct email address. I think it's Learning Store. We'll find that out. We'll get that for you. Jim in Winnicotti, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a yard that's about an acre and a half, and I'm converting it from an alfalfa field to grass over the last 3 years. And I have been spraying it and so forth, and I'm trying not to fertilize it. Is there a way to build up the nutrients? I'm afraid if I have to fertilize an acre and a half yard, I will be mowing forever. Is there a way to build up the nutrients and make a nice, rich grass without putting fertilizer on?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. That's one of the dilemmas is to create a thick, dense lawn. You need to add nutrients, and then when you have nutrients, the grass is going to grow. Slower-growing grasses tend to be things like fine fescues. So if you can plant those grasses, they grow more slowly. They need less nutrients to live. They can survive in low-nutrient environments. Adding if you have access to some sort of yard waste compost or municipal compost, something that you can put on that will have tend to have slow release of nutrients is a good option. But yeah, that's a difficult one because you, especially when you're establishing that grass, it's really beneficial to have a source of nutrients there. So I guess my advice would be apply the fertilizer, get it growing, and then you can back off in subsequent years.
Is there really a difference in fertilizers between some generic brand and some fake high quality commercial brand as far as fertilizer?
Yeah, there's
price wise.
There are differences. There are definitely differences, and it tends to be that the less expensive fertilizers have nutrient sources that are released immediately or very, very quickly. The more expensive fertilizers tend to have some slow release forms of the nutrients, which might be beneficial for your case to provide kind of a slower release of those nutrients over time. So that's what you pay for usually when you're buying more expensive fertilizer is nutrients that are released slowly.
And frankly, isn't it true, Doug, that if you're only going to fertilize once, maybe the fall fertilization would be the best time to fertilize? Because isn't that where that goes into the roots instead of...
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if you're going to fertilize once, the best timing to do that is probably late September, early October. Because the shoot growth will be minimized compared to other times of the year, and the benefit goes down into the roots.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind, and thank you much.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And we were right on the Learning Store website. It is learningstore.uwex.edu. So it's actually fairly simple, learningstore.uwex.edu. And you'll find what you need right there. Kim in Washburn, on to you now. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an area of my lawn that I don't seem to be able to, I can't grow grass there. And, you know, there's dead and dying spruces that are lining the perimeter of that area. Is that possibly a reason why the grass won't grow there?
Probably shading it.
Yeah.
Well, but there were box elders that I had cleared out, so there is sun coming into that area. But I just seem to have a problem growing grass there.
Usually near trees, we have problems with shade. Even though you get some sunlight, we really need 4 to 6 hours minimum to grow healthy grass. Could be things like competition from the roots of the other species, especially if it's compacted or it's growing shallowly. You have roots there. The tree roots really outcompete the grass roots. So those are the two things that really jump to the front of my mind.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Doug Soldat, our guest today, is a turf grass and urban soil scientist with UWEX, UW Extension, and the Department of Soil Science in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a lawn or turf question, I hope you'll join us. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Doug Soldat, as we talk lawn care during this spring season. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And speaking of emailing, We heard from Judy, who has this question for you, Doug. She says, last summer I raised the wheels of my lawnmower as it had been burning out the lawn due to my having the wheels so low. Sun got in there. When I cut the grass, the blades stayed quite long after I raised the wheels. The lawn did indeed heal, and the grass was great. After the snow melted this winter and spring came, my lawn was totally full of thatch. This had never happened before. I think it's because the grass was so long all summer last summer that it encouraged thatch. Now I have a dethatching job on my hands. Which is better, short grass or long grass?
Long grass.
I say long grass, too. Long grass is still better.
So it's not thatch. This happens to me, too. I saw the exact same thing in my lawn. I cut it really high, and then what happens is you have a lot of leaf tissue there. And that snow mold loves leaf tissue. So you have a lot of leaf tissue. What the snow mold does is come in and just chew on those leaves, which is not a problem. Doesn't kill the plant at all. Just kills the leaves. And then so when the snow cover leaves, you have a bunch of those dead long leaves. And it looks like thatch, but it's not thatch. If you wait, that'll just go away. It's very high in easy to access nutrients for the microbes. The microbes will start breaking those old leaves down and they'll be gone. So I wouldn't even pull out the dethatcher. That's just what happens when you mow high, and you'll get used to it, and boy, 3 weeks from now you won't see any of that stuff, even if you don't dethatch. So really it's just a consequence of going into the winter with longer blades of grass, and it's not harmful at all.
No. Karen in Portage, we're on to you now. Hi, Karen.
Thank you. This is probably a strange question because I hate lawns. I find them very wasteful. But I have a situation on my farm where you need graft, and I have a slope behind the barn that I have lost all the graft, and I mean everything. There's some shade, but there's some hot sun, and I think that the demise came from a tenant that I couldn't convince you cannot mow sand country wild grass every week.
Yeah.
And I have been reading on this no-mow fescues, and a lot of the that type of a lawn is fescues. And the one company that I found, they said it gets like 4 inches high, but it's a minimum order, which makes it very expensive on a trial.
So you're wondering about the value of no-mow fescues.
Yeah, or if any of these fescues work. I looked at the Zoya, but that stuff doesn't.
No, that is not good. No,
and then they have the Canadian lawn, which is another one you see advertised.
So you hit it on the head there. There's a lot of advertisement. If it's no-mow or low-mow, really what we're talking about is a mixture, a blend of fine leaf fescues. So you can go to the store, you can go to a garden store and find a bag of seed that fits your price range that contains fine leaf fescues. So we're talking about on the seed label, it should have a mixture of red fescue, hard fescue, and chewings fescue. Those are the three types of fine fescues that we have the most success with. And these are essentially marketed as low-mow or no-mow varieties. They're very slow-growing. They're very tolerant of drought. They can survive in low-nutrient environments. They do great in sand. They do pretty good in shade. So it sounds like that's really what you want to do. And I guess what I'm saying is just go to a garden store and find one of these hard chewings or red fescue mixes that suits the price range. A lot of times they'll be sold at much higher prices and just really for marketing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And John in Schofield, it's your turn now. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was going to talk about snow mold, but you just did a little bit. I was wondering about the characteristics of it, but you did just talk about a little bit. One other thing I thought about, generally in the fall, I try to mow my lawn a little shorter in the fall going into winter. Is that a good practice to cut down on the thatch in the spring and help reduce the snow mold?
Yeah, you know, it will reduce snow mold, but it probably does more damage than good, because what you do is when you cut grass short, it's going to bring up the root system. It's going to shorten the depth of the root system. Mm. So what you're going into is shorter roots over the winter, shorter roots in the spring, shorter roots in the summer. So I recommend just leave that mowing height high.
Okay.
And deal with the longer the longer grass and the more dead leaves in the winter, but that goes away quickly.
And the snow mold, just kind of wait till we get a couple of good warm rains, and it should probably come back. Huh?
Yep. It comes right back.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Duluth, Minnesota, talk to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Last year I took about a 20 to 30 foot square foot patch of grass that wasn't growing, and I tilled the whole thing up completely, so it was all dirt, and I did the testing and put everything in, and then I seeded it, and it's coming up now pretty well, but it's kind of patchy, and I was wondering if there's anything I should do to supplement the growth now, or if I need to put in some more seed, or just let it grow, or watch it, or what recommendations you'd have.
How big are the patches without any grass?
Oh, it's hard to tell. I mean, it looks pretty evenly spread out, but at the same time, there's places where it's kind of baldy. I mean, I followed the distribution directions on the bag that I seeded in the fall, and I wish the whole thing had come up the way it does come up, but there's patches throughout that are pretty, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going to be okay, because the grass, if you seed it in the fall, probably wasn't too vigorous, and usually what we worry about is if you seed too late in the fall, you can get it wiped out by winter kill. But it sounds like that didn't happen. So you got two options. You could go in now with some new seed and maybe some topsoil and kind of just patch seed the light areas, or you can just wait. And I think you being up in Duluth, you give it 2-3 more weeks, the soil temperatures warm up, and the grass really takes off. And okay. I'm guessing it's a mix of Kentucky bluegrass?
It's the stuff that I was recommended to use up here. I don't know the name of
okay.
it, but yeah, it was the half shade, half sun thing.
Yeah, so that will contain varieties of grass that do spread and fill in low areas.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and seed some of the more bare patches, but I think it sounds like you're going to be all right.
And my wife suggested covering it with straw, and I said no. So can you tell me who wins that bet?
You should have covered it with straw in the fall.
Okay.
Now that you do have some grass coming up, it's not going to do you much good.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for the help.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Andrew in De Pere emailed and says, my wife and I just purchased our first home. Prior to moving in, there was work done and around the foundation that destroyed a lot of our lawn. The contractor will be reseeding the areas destroyed, but the previous owners also took very poor care of the yard, according to the neighbors anyway. Thistles and weeds everywhere. Also, I can pull up the brown grass in the yard and it nearly comes to my knees. Oh, my goodness. Do you have any suggestions for a first-timer as where to start on a situation like this?
Well, what I would do is wait till winter comes and then put your house on the market and find a house, sell the house, find a place with a nice lawn. Well, you know, it's always a challenge, especially renovating a lawn that starts off in a really poor condition is always challenging. So it's going to take time. So you first thing you need is patience. What I would do is fertilize it and mow it at 3 inches regularly, and then reassess what it looks like probably mid-June. At that point, you can make a decision whether or not you want to use chemical control to get rid of the weeds, or if you're talking full scale, there's no grass here, just complete renovation. So, but give it some time right now. Like I said, fertilize it. And then mow it and just treat it like you would as if it was a high quality lawn, and then make your decision midsummer when we have things that are actually growing. Because sometimes you can be surprised at the turnaround you can make just by fertilizing and mowing at the proper height.
And that 3 inches is important, not shorter.
Not shorter. Nope.
No, 3 inches is the minimum. All right. Let's go to Dave in Milwaukee. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how are you guys today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Well, hey, I had a comment about a previous caller, the lady who had a bumpy yard, you know.
Yeah.
In addition or in replacement of verification, you know, you could roll that. And that's, you know, you probably a typical homeowner would probably still have to have somebody do that. But if you take a heavy barrel or something, roll it over the yard after you water it, of course, you can usually smooth out a lot of bumps.
Yeah, yeah. I thought about that, but my, you know, the concern is compaction, and if you, I guess the reason I said it's probably not a big deal is what you really want to create is a healthy growing environment for the roots. So if you start watering it and then rolling out the bumps, that's great. But, you know, probably an uncompacted, healthy root zone is better for the turf than a compacted one, which you might induce problems. But yeah, you're...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's one of those give and take things, you know. You just have to be careful. But then one other comment, real quick, is about another caller had asked about Milorg or about what fertilizer, and you know, Milorganite is a great, you know, I've put out a lot of Milorganite, and it's cheap, and I think it does a good job. It's fairly time release, and it seems like a really good product for lawns of all kinds.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. That's as we look at Milorganite or look at the bag, what's the N nitrogen content, N, P, and K content on typical Milorganite?
It's a 6-2-0, 6% nitrogen, 2% phosphate, and no potassium.
Okay.
Which is just fine for bluegrass.
<That's> right.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Take it easy.
Yep. Bye-bye. Doug in Partyville, on to you. Hi, Douglas.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a pin oak tree that we have planted in the front yard, and it's probably 45, 50 feet tall at this time, very nice shape. The problem is that the grass surrounding this pin oak, probably a 30-foot radius around the base of this tree, tends to yellow or get a off coloration. We've tried adding iron to the soil a couple times to correct that. It seems to do a short-term correction, but the yellowing around this pin oak just seems to keep spreading. Was wondering what thoughts or recommendations might be there.
Do you fertilize at all, or do you water at all?
Yes, we've watered it, and we typically fertilize in the summer, mid or early summer, and then in the fall. It's okay. In a rural yard. It's a sandy type of a soil, so it's not the best lawn soil in the world. But the problem is only adjacent to or around this pin oak, and it's the limbs are cut up where it gets good light out underneath it. And that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a tough one. Because usually, if it's an iron problem, usually you'd think the pin oak would be the one that was getting yellow and not the grass. Grasses tend to be pretty good at finding the iron that they need, and oak trees are the opposite. I don't know. Pin oaks, my experience, have been a decent a tree to grow grass underneath because, like you said, they don't have a really super shady canopy, a lot of air movement under there. It could be the combination of the tree root competition and the sandy soil that's creating the yellowing, and that's kind of a drought response. I would be reluctant to put more nitrogen on the grass than you are, especially in the shade and in the sand. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Hmm.
What do you think, Larry?
Would a soil test help on that one at all?
A soil test might help. It might give you some indication of iron. We don't really have the best soil test for iron. Usually the soil test will tell you the pH, the organic matter content, and the phosphorus and potassium. And the problem that you're describing doesn't sound to me as if it's one of those four issues. But you can try an iron soil test and see what that comes out. And if you want to contact me to interpret the soil test later, I'd be happy to do that with you.
All right, I thank you. You know, this problem has gotten larger around the perimeter. This tree, as the tree has grown, and like I say, it's got very nice shape. It's getting up there in a size range that is quite attractive.
Oh, sure.
And but the definite circumference around this tree, and it appears to be equally around the tree. You know, it isn't in any one portion of it. It's a complete circle, so to speak. But I thank you for taking the call.
Now, yeah. You know what the grass is that you have there? Is it a Kentucky bluegrass? Or?
Well, it's more of a fescue type of a grass that's on there than the Kentucky bluegrass. And that the mix that we put on was a lawn mix that has been, you know, this lawn has been established for a long period of time, and actually we placed that pin oak in that spot after the lawn was well established, and this condition really did not appear in that area at all until that oak was there. Now, maybe we're not getting enough water regularly enough on this area.
Yeah, it could be. The more you describe it, it sounds like it is a root competition issue. Yeah. And the difference in color might be the fact that you're getting separation in the species of grasses from the sunny to the shady areas. And sometimes the fescues will take on a more yellowish look. And then especially as the roots of that tree continue to expand. So the circle's expanding. Maybe that's the circumference of the roots that are expanding and competing with that grass. So you know, maybe try watering a section of it more or less and leaving the other part and see if that clears up anything.
All right. Yeah. I appreciate your thoughts on it, and we'll see what happens.
All right.
Good luck.
I'd take a soil test and I'd water half of it more often. What a normal, is it an inch a week we try to get on the lawn pretty much?
About an inch a week, yeah.
So much. Okay, thanks, Doug. Paul in Winona, Minnesota, we're on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. Say, quick question. I might have already messed up a little, but I already thatched my yard and got a lot of dead grass. But basically, in a nutshell, what is the best time to aerate and thatch? And I've also put my pre-emergent down already. And also, when is the best time to put a broadleaf preventer down?
Okay, so the pre-emergence, right on the money. Early May, when the forsythia are in full bloom, is about the best time to put down the pre-emergent for crabgrass. Best time for broadleaf control tends to be in the fall, although you can get results all year round. But the fall is the most efficient and effective time for broadleaves. Aerification, I do that in the fall because what you have right now is a lot of weed seeds that want to germinate. And when you poke holes in the ground and you bring dirt and seeds to the surface, you're just encouraging those weeds to germinate. So in the fall, there's not too many weeds that are really germinating in the fall. That's a good time to aerify. Same thing with the dethatching. So if you dethatched, what you did was you went in there and you ripped up the soil surface, you damaged some of the growing plants already that were stressed from winter, and then you created a nice seed bed for any weed seeds that would be out there. So to really lay it on thick. But, you know, that's, you're going to be fine. The grass is going to come in. You know, a lot of people in my neighborhood will shave their grass down really early, shave it really low. And what that does is warms the soil temps up, and their grass will start greening up faster than everybody else's. And that's another way to remove all those dead leaves. But what they did was they stressed out their grass, and they created an environment or a window when the grass was short and there was soil exposed where weeds can germinate. So the best thing to do in the spring is just have patience and just let the soil temps warm up at their own pace, and the grass will start to grow, and just try to keep the soil exposed or the soil disturbance to a minimum in the spring.
All right.
So basically, and I'll take the rest of my answer off there, but basically when is the best time to thatch? Because I did aerate, and by the way, I didn't thatch everything and rake everything.
Right.
Because I got a two-acre yard.
Okay.
So. But I'll take my answer off there, and I really, really enjoy your program.
All right, thanks.
So the best time to thatch would be in the fall, the same time that you would aerate. If you do have a thatch problem, so let's not confuse dead grass leaves to thatch. So thatch should be actually below the plant and in between the soil layer, and it should be kind of a thick, kind of stiff material that doesn't break down easily like dead grass leaves. If you have that, that means you're fertilizing too much, and what I'm going to recommend is you back down on your fertilizer program by one or two applications per year. So if you have thatch buildup, it's really an indication of too much fertilizer. Best way to take care of it is just to fertilize less, and then if you do have to clear up that thatch, fall is the best time to do that.
All right. Thanks again for calling. Chris in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have a question about having a big lawn and two big dogs.
Yeah.
We've got yellow spots everywhere in the lawn. Is there anything we can do shy of getting rid of the dogs?
No, unfortunately, there's not much you can do about that other than dump water on the spot immediately after the dog does the business. Because what you're seeing there is localized salt damage, and the only way to minimize the salt damage is to either plant a salt-tolerant grass, which we don't have too many good options for Green Bay, or to dilute the salt, which you would do by adding water to the area. So, you know, it's a perennial problem, and there's not too many good solutions for it.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I remember a lawn guy telling me that he had a client, a lawn care guy, he had a client who every spring he'd call and he'd go out there and put little pieces of sod, dig out the spots
every time
around the lawn and put in little pieces of sod all around the lawn.
Whatever you want.
Did it every spring. Phil in Stockbridge, your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a problem with, I believe, our, they call them voles or field mice. During the winter, underneath the snow cover, they eat my, not the roots of the grass, but right down by the soil of the grass and make little tunnel and bare spots in my lawn. Is there anything I can do about that?
Wouldn't be moles, would it, in the wintertime?
Yeah. Mice
would be more like moles. I think they go down deep, don't they, when it gets winter?
Yes.
Yeah, and they create tunnels, and you know, kind of rip up the grass. They kill the roots, and you have these brown lines all over your yard. Is that what you have?
Yes, I have. It's dead, like dead grass leaf. You know, all where the tunnels are, it rakes away real easy, and then it's bare. You know, like bare soil right underneath.
But it's not humped up. The soil? No, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I'm going to pass on that one.
Wouldn't be moles.
No, I've heard it was either called voles, V-O-L-E-S, and they say they're a field mice that live under the snow, and that's what they eat during the winter.
Yeah, so your question is now that you've got that, what do you
what do I do to get rid of them?
They call the animal control folks, I guess. I remember, I don't know if this is the solution, but last time in September we were talking about these windmills that you put in the ground and they spin around and create these vibrations that the voles don't like, so then they leave the area. I think there might be a publication on the Learning Store that talks about how to get rid of voles.
Okay.
If that is the issue, I mean, I think trapping is an option. Creating that windmill that vibrates the ground gets rid of them. The getting rid of the food source is sometimes a good option, and they eat grubs. So maybe making if you have grubs. You know, check under the soil for grubs. If you have grubs, maybe consider treating for them in July. If you eliminate this food source, they're going to go somewhere else for food. I think that's the best advice I can give, but it's not my strong point.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Doug Soldat, our guest today, Turfgrass UW Extension soil scientist, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking lawn and turf grass care with Doug Soldat, UW Extension soil scientist. Pleased to have him along, and thanks for listening. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. And have an email from Craig, who has 65 acres of permanent grass pasture, has moss covering some of the ground that should be forage. Any recommendation to get rid of the moss? That's a strange one, too, unless this happens to be a really shaded
pasture. Usually we don't see moss in open environments.
Unless it's really wet.
Unless it's too wet, yeah. You know, there's not a lot of good options for getting rid of moss rather than changing the growing environment. And usually we're talking about cutting down trees, increasing the airflow, things like that. But as far as chemical control for moss, we just don't recommend that. It's usually an environmental thing. Maybe it's a low spot in the pasture. It's going to be perennially wet, and you're just not going to have success growing grass there.
It's about all I can come up with, too. I can't think of any other. We had a little more information. It might have helped on that one, too. It's so maybe he can call us at some point. Greg in Green Bay, it's on to you now. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you? I've got just on the vole thing real quick, as I believe I had what everybody calls voles as well one time, and I simply did what you guys said. I did the trapping thing, and I sure as heck just used the old-fashioned traps where you just spring the trap and it whacks them on the tail or whatever and got rid of about five of them and never had it since. I don't know if that was the ultimate cure, but anyway, that's not my comment, but my question is I have a lawn, about 13,000-square-foot lawn, and a few years back it started getting a different kind of a grass started growing in that I refer to it as a quack grass, but my neighbor's a Parks and Rec biologist. He says that's not the real name for it, but close as I can come up with it, kind of looks like it's usually a patch that starts, and it kind of looks like a Bart's head, like Bart Simpson's hairdo kind of thing, real close to the ground. It's a thick, clumpy grass, and his advice was just the only way to get rid of it really is to spray and kill it with Roundup, which I did, and I'm probably looking at about a sixth of my lawn that I had sprayed, and right now it's all brown, but of course, unbelievably so, the grass is dead, the real grass, but now the quack grass is very minute coming back a little bit, so I'm looking at probably a second application to get rid of it. But so you could comment on that if I did the right thing, and if I didn't, it's too late, of course. But secondly, most importantly to me is, how long do I have to wait after that Roundup application to think about reseeding? And when I reseed, is just getting like a slit seeder going to work for me, or am I going to have to do something more as far as planting that grass? New grass.
Slit seeder should work fine. Okay. And how long do you have to wait? Usually when I use Roundup, you want to wait until the plants are dead, like really brown and dead. So, and then that also makes it easy to work up the soil for this, you know, slit seeder to cut through it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, you know, there's not Roundup is tightly bound by the soil, so there's not a long residual activity. In terms of the grass, it's strange. I'm not sure exactly what type of grass it is. If it's a Parks and Recs person, they tend to know grasses pretty well. Quack grass, it sounds a little bit like quack grass, because quack grass produces these deep underground rhizomes, which makes it really difficult to kill, even with Roundup, because it has these big, thick underground kind of like stems that you kill the plant and it has so much energy and carbohydrates down there that they'll put out new shoots, but it tends not to grow in clumps. So crab grass tends to grow in clumps, but that's fairly easy to kill, and you wouldn't be seeing that now.
Yeah, he says it's definitely not crab grass, which I couldn't identify it if I saw it either, but he says it's definitely not crab grass, and I do have a lawn service comes in and sprays, and crabgrass preventer is one of the things they do, have done for years, so I would tend to think it's not crabgrass.
Yeah, it wouldn't be crabgrass.
It could be quackgrass, though, and there are no other things that will kill quackgrass that are available to homeowners except for Roundup. So I guess you're doing the right thing from that standpoint. I'm not surprised that it keeps coming back, because that's what happens with quackgrass. Really problematic weed.
Would two applications tend to do it before I reseed?
No, it's not the initial application. It's just the fact that it survives underground for a long time, so it just keeps coming back. I guess over time, after you eventually you're going to get the population down to a tolerable level.
With the Roundup application?
Yeah, you're going to have to do Roundup.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, if he's hit it once, if he hits it again, I got to believe that it's going to be weakened considerably and give the grass a better chance to compete.
Yeah. If you hit it once, usually Roundup works. It'll translocate, locate through the plant, bring it down to the roots, and kill everything. It's just the fact that you have this large store of energy under the soil, and it just comes back. Right, so it's a thing that quack grass has that other grasses don't.
Tim in Wausau up next. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Larry and Doug. You mentioned a resource for soil testing earlier.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if Could that resource be used for soil testing in general, or is that specific to lawns?
No, it could be, I think, for in general.
Any type of soil that needs to be tested. It's the University of Wisconsin Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory, and they're on the web.
And tell them what what the soil's from. I mean, if it's a lawn or pasture or whatever it might be, you want to let them know.
Yeah, they have submission forms for different areas. You tell them about the soil that you're sending in right on the form and what you want tested, and they'll give you the results.
Okay. Currently it's lawn, but I'm not interested in exclusively lawn in the future, so I just wanted to know in general what I have in the yard.
Sure.
One other question. I'd like to educate myself about Zone 4 and planting in general in Zone 4. Is it possible to at least get a start on doing that with University of Wisconsin websites or DNR websites?
Well, if you go to the Learning Store, .uwex.edu, and lawns, you're going to get a lot of information. And typically what they'll have is they'll have zone information in those publications.
Uh-huh.
So you can find out a lot.
Yeah.
And even a trip over to the local county extension office may even have some localized materials for you, too, or just give them a call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do you recommend any books that you've seen on that subject?
Again, to go back to the Learning Store, there's the Wisconsin Gardener's Handbook, and it's all about gardening. There's information on lawns out there. It's a collection of most of the extension resources that have been put together over time. I think it's available for purchase through the Learning Store, and I think that's specific to Wisconsin, written by extension specialists and agents, so it's a good information source.
Another source would be Melinda Myers, who was formerly an extension agent, but she's been for many years now. She's been in kind of on her own a bit, but she does Great Lakes. She's on television, has her own TV program. She's a regular guest on our program as well. And she's got a nice book on lawns and lawn care in Wisconsin. So, and I know she does zones in that.
Okay.
All right.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Diane and Eau Claire, we're on to you now. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I have a problem. My elderly mother's yard has just become overgrown with creeping Charlie. And I know everything I've heard in the past is that the best way is just to pull it, but it's just gotten so out of control. It's creeped into her flower beds and the areas where she has evergreen shrubs. Really out of control. Just wondering if you have any kinds of suggestions.
Well, there's only a couple times of the year when you can get after it.
Yeah, it's difficult. Pulling is an option. Tends to come back. Again, creeping Charlie or ground ivy is something that we see in specific environments. So lots of shade, places where grass or other plants don't like to grow. So the weed has an advantage there. As far as chemical control, if that's what you're wondering. Spring is okay to go ahead and make an application of just any over-the-counter broadleaf herbicide, and fall is the best time, but sometimes it takes more than one application to really knock it back. So we recommend do it in fall, but again, if you need to get something going this spring, that would be an okay time as well.
Usually when you see those little purple flowers, I think that's in spring, at least that's the time to do it.
Right. So the plant puts its resources into the flowers, and it kind of weakens itself, so that's a good time to do it.
Would that broadleaf weed killer hurt the perennial flowers and the evergreen shrubs?
It could, absolutely. So you have to be careful or do it when the perennials aren't up. I guess the perennials are probably already going. So
don't do it on a windy day.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Chris in Kenosha, on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi. We've got a thin driveway with grass that parallels both sides. And this winter, in order to park in the driveway, we blew the snow off portions of the sides of the driveway, and now the grass is completely dead. I'm thinking we probably took away its cover.
So you piled the snow on top of the grass?
Or we removed the snow from about a foot on each side off the grass.
Oh, okay.
So we left it kind of open, I think, to the freezing. Is that what we did?
Yeah, that happens. And I was just talking with somebody the other day who said the same thing, is that the place where the snow wasn't in the yard, that's where the grass is dead.
Yeah.
So the snow is a really good insulator, and it protects a lot against those low temperatures and freeze-thaw cycles. So that's probably what happened.
We just have to replant it, you think?
You don't think it's
not going to come up through the...
You're in Eau Claire?
In Kenosha.
You're in Kenosha. Oh, yeah. So if things aren't starting to green up already in Kenosha...
Nope.
You're probably looking at a seed job there. Yeah.
If it's a strip, maybe you I'd lay some sod.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, this probably isn't a lot of sod, and then you've got it right there.
Yep.
It's good. It's done. So good luck, Chris, and thank you very much for calling. Doug Soldat, UW Extension Turfgrass and Soil Scientist, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking lawns and turfgrass on this edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Doug Soldat, our guest, turfgrass and urban soil scientist, assistant professor in the Department of Soil Science in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, and of course with UW Extension as well. So I'm looking at our computer here, and I see that there's an open line or two, and you could join in with your questions. I know we have questions about mowing. We have bluegrass questions. We have... another question on dog spots on the lawn. And let's see, what else have we got here? Oh, we have rust in the lawns. We got lots of questions, but we'll try and take yours too. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Back with Doug right after the news. Talking about your lawn on this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here with my guest Doug Soldat, UW Extension Turf and Soil Scientist. Really pleased to have him back again, and he'll be with us probably through the growing season as we look at our lawns. And join in with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. We have a question here, an email from Mark from Johnson Creek. Rents the home, and part of the lease agreement is mowing about 2 acres of lawn. Personally, I can't think of any bigger waste of time and natural resources than lawn grass. I have my riding lawnmower set at putting green height, and yet I still have to mow as often as our neighbor, who is a fanatic out there. Is there anything I can do short of borrowing my dad's farm sprayer full of Roundup to get the lawn to grow slower, hence less mowing?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are growth regulating chemicals that are available to professional and commercial applicators. They're not available to the homeowner market, and they tend to be expensive. Even if they were, so the cost, I'm not sure what the cost benefit would be. But so yeah, that's a reality. There are chemicals that can slow the growth of the grass. Unfortunately, they're not widely available. And it sounded like the grass was being mowed at putting green heights, or mowing really low, and that's
a bad thing.
That's a misconception, that mowing that low will require you to mow less. It's definitely not true. You mow almost regardless of the mowing height, you're going to end up removing about the same amount of tissue every time. So just raise up the mowing height, and you're not going to have to mow any more often than what you're doing now by shaving it down. In fact, it might put less of a strain on the mower when you're going through and really shaving things down. So,
mow it high, and you won't have to mow any more often, and you'll have a healthier lawn because the grass will outcompete the weeds, and so it'll look better. Let's go to Joel in Altoona. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Larry and Doug. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have a follow-up question. I think I heard you say that in the fall you should not mow your yard shorter, because we have always done that year after year because to prevent snow mold. But did I hear you say that stresses out the grass, even if you do it later in fall?
Yeah, it used to, you know, it used to be the thing to do is shave it down low in the fall. And I think as the science has progressed, we've gotten away from recommending that because the damage that the snow mold does is non-lethal.
Okay.
And the damage that you do by shaving it down really low is you limit the root system. You produce a shallower root system. So you don't want to do that. So that's why you say just leave it high. Set it high and leave it high in the spring, leave it high in the summer, leave it high in the fall.
Okay.
And by mowing it higher, you're getting deeper roots. And
okay.
So, yeah, you get more visual snow mold damage, but it's not killing grass. So it's really just a thing that you have to deal with, you know, right when the snow melts and maybe for the next couple weeks.
Okay. Now I've got another question, please. We put down a new, we had some construction done, so we put down a new lawn in the area of our yard last fall, and it's come up quite nice this spring. But we have quite a few weeds in there. Should I wait a little bit before I apply a weed killer to let the lawn establish itself a little bit, or should I go ahead and put a weed killer on there now?
How long is the grass?
Well, it's getting ready to where we should be thinking about mowing it.
Okay, yeah, you want to wait. You want to wait until you mow it a few times at least before you go out and try to control the weeds, because the grass, when it's young, it will be sensitive. So usually the label of the product that you're going to use will tell you when it's safe to apply.
Okay.
And it might tell you how many leaves the grass plant has or how long since you seeded. But generally, you want to wait. You don't want to go out too early.
Even if we seeded last fall, we should still wait this spring, at least a couple, three mowings.
Yeah, I would.
Okay. And if I may, one final question. That deals with another misconception that I guess I've had. We've always put down a commercial crabgrass preventer, and it's real tough to find a crabgrass preventer that doesn't have nitrogen or a fertilizer with it. And I've been told in the past that, you know, you don't want to fertilize this early at the time when you should be killing crabgrass.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that hard. I had this question earlier this year, and I did a quick internet search, and I found three or four products that are just the crabgrass preventer without the fertilizer in it.
So you would agree you definitely don't want to put down nitrogen at this time?
Yeah, it's too early. I think it's too early for nitrogen. I wait until usually the end of May, early
okay.
June.
Okay, thank you. I've enjoyed the program.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And let's see, we got Steve in Appleton. Emailed, last year toward the middle to end of summer, there was a rust-colored powder on our lawn. And when we walked across the area, you'd get it all over your feet. It was an area that had sun for the better part of the day. Our neighbor also had noticed it on his lawn. Any ideas what it is, and will it come back this year, or how can I prevent or treat it?
Rust. That's rust. Actually what it is. It's called rust, and it is technically a disease, although it doesn't do much damage at all to the turf grass. It tends to be found mostly with perennial ryegrass, sometimes on Kentucky bluegrass. It does happen in summer, late summer. It tends to be associated with low nitrogen. So one thing you could do is apply nitrogen to increase the level of nitrogen. You'll see less rust. But it doesn't kill the plant. It gets on your shoes. It's annoying. But it's really nothing to get too excited about.
Luann and Madison, your turn now. Hi, Luann.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I want to thank you for the information about not mowing short in the fall, because I had always done that, and I'll stop doing that now. But my question is about rough bluegrass. I noticed a funny-looking patch of grass about 3 years ago on our lawn, and I had it tested, and they said it was rough bluegrass, and it was kind of a noxious thing. So I killed about a 5-foot by 10-foot area where I had it and reseeded it, and that's fine. But now I see a bunch of other little spots of it throughout the lawn. Is there anything I can do about it or just put up with it?
No, so it's probably, do you have some shade and it's kind of wet back there?
It's wet. It's not,
yeah,
it's a little shady, but a lot of sun, but it's wet.
Rough bluegrass loves wet areas, and it's very similar to Kentucky bluegrass in its biology, so there's not any chemical control options that are going to take it out. I don't think it's that bad, really. People say, well, it's a noxious weed, but it's the number one seed that's produced in the United States because they use it down south to overseed golf courses and things to keep them green during the winter. But it's a bluegrass, and if you have a wet and sometimes shaded site, it's a really good option. It's a little lighter green, so that's probably why it stands out. But, you know, I wouldn't have taken it out. I would just let it kind of maybe take over the yard because that's where it wants to grow. And it's a nice looking bluegrass. I would just leave it, I guess.
Okay. Well, it just looks funny right now, but I know after the spring is over, it looks better.
Yeah, it turns darker. Yeah.
So, okay, well, I'll just love it then. Yucky.
Yeah. Love it, don't leave it. You love it and leave it.
Be proud of that.
Okay.
Be proud of
all
that,
right.
Grass.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Karen was a little bothered by the recommendation to plant European ginger when there's a fine native ginger that you recommended earlier in the show. She was looking at cutting back on the lawn itself. You could use native ferns or sedges or wild geraniums or columbine. Periwinkle is listed on Wisconsin's list of invasive plants. So she's wondering about whether – she doesn't think that's desirable. She's wondering if that's what you think. And, well, just comments on
yeah.
that.
Yeah, well, definitely appreciate the input. This – alternatives to grass is not really what I do. I found this from UW. The list I read off was from a UW Extension publication that perhaps needs to be updated. But I guess the main point is there are resources out there where you can find ground perennial native ground covers that can grow well in the shade, and to use UW Extension to find those resources.
And it is nice, too, as she was thinking about, too, to if you can reduce the size of your lawn with some native plants of sort, that's kind of nice. Less lawn to mow. And
yeah, I think so. I don't like to mow my lawn any more than anybody else. So I like to think about what's the function of the grass. And I like to have some space that I mm-hmm. – a little bit of ornamental grass. I also like to have a place for my dog and my kids to run around. And that's about how much lawn I want. Because if I have more than that and I'm just mowing – we heard frustrations from the email sent in about the 2 acres that's in his contract. He has to mow it. And, yeah, everybody gets frustrated by that. So if you don't want lawn, there's no problem with using the lawn that's functional and putting – maybe other native plants in other areas to reduce the maintenance.
Susan in Stoughton, on to you now. Hi, Susan.
Hi. you have such a good show. I appreciate it always. I wanted to comment the fellow who has the dogs who leaves yellow spots on his grass and wondered if he should get rid of the dogs. I wanted to add to the answer that there are some products at the pet supply stores that you can give your dog. They're like treats, but they have a chemical or a component in it at any rate that takes the acid out of what the dog leaves behind. And that has worked very well for our two big, lovable lads. So if that fellow is still listening, he might want to go, I won't say any specific product, but they're easily found in the larger pet stores.
It's a point. People have brought that up before. There's another one that home remedy that involved tomato juice.
Yeah.
And I can never understand how that worked, but I know there are people who swear by putting a tablespoon or two of tomato juice in the dog food.
Yeah. I don't have direct experience with this. But what I've heard from the people I interact with across the U.S. is that some of the products work, some of them they don't. It depends on the dog, and it's just so spotty that you just don't want to say, go out and this will work for you. But I'm glad to hear that it has worked for you and your pets, and it's definitely an option to give it a shot.
Yeah.
But usually it's a salt thing. Usually it's just there's a massive amount of salts, and if the dog can drink more water, we tend to see less damage.
Less acid.
So maybe.
Well, the dog would certainly enjoy the treat over the
right.
tomato juice.
I know the dogs will.
Thanks, Susan.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. All right. Yeah, you have to kind of sneak the tomato juice in, I think, with the dog food. And I suppose maybe that makes the dog drink more.
Yeah. I have a dog with a kidney disease, which is really sad, but it forces him. He drinks a lot of water, and we've never once had any spots in our lawn because his urine is very dilute. He drinks a lot of water because of his condition.
Sure.
So,
Let's go to Neil in Heartland. Hi, Neil.
Hi. I was going to say something about the tomato juice for the dogs. And we have four dogs, and we use the tomato juice, and it works great. And before that, we had brown spots all over the place. And all you have to do is pour a little bit of the juice in their food, and they love it. They think it's gravy.
Cool.
How much do you put in, roughly?
Just a little splash, you know, maybe a tablespoon or two.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Don't measure it out. You just pour it in, and it gravies it up, and they love it.
Give it a shot. Anybody out there?
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Neil, for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, I've had many people call and say this really works.
Okay.
And don't know why, but who cares? It doesn't hurt the dog. And
That's right.
It saves the lawn.
Seems pretty easy.
Oh, man. Karen had a question emailed. Will grass seed grow in an area that has had only thick compost to fill in the area? We have a new area that we put the compost to fill in and now put grass seed in. Will this work? And what's the best time to prevent the Japanese beetles? And what to use? Japanese beetles, you're not going to prevent.
Yeah.
So I'm told, and many times this has come up, do not put the Japanese beetles traps up unless you can get like a neighbor a couple of houses down to do it, because it just attracts more.
Attracts them to your yard.
Attracts them to your yard.
So what you do is give all the traps to your neighbors as gifts.
Get them. But in terms of compost, so here's an area that was composted, now putting grass seed in, is that going to be a
problem? Yeah. So it should. The thing you want to make sure is that the compost has the ability to hold enough water, won't dry out really quickly. So it depends on the type of compost, but there's no problem with getting grass to grow in compost. In fact, that's what some of the home builders will do, is they actually mix up a compost and grass seed mix and spray it out onto the construction site, and it grows great.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Diane and Spooner next. Hi, Diane.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Great.
We live up in northern Wisconsin. Our yard is very loamy, you know, full of sand, very little black dirt. We have been just having trouble growing grass or anything on our drain field in the backyard. Right now we planted some clover. Somebody suggested that to us. Do you have any ideas or recommendations?
And what's the drain field site like? Is it in
it's
full?
Sunny. It's all full, sun.
All
yeah.
sun, really sandy.
Yep.
So it's probably a moisture issue, is my guess. In that.
Well, I guess I don't know. We just don't know how far we can kind of till the soil up. I mean, we've kind of talked about maybe putting it as a garden site back there, but I don't know how much we can till.
Because
you know, on top
septic.
Of a drain field,
yeah.
you know, and
I
stuff.
Wouldn't be putting a garden over the top of it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
That I know we kind of ruled that out, but we just still are having trouble getting any type of thing. There was a couple of years we thought we would maybe try some native flowers and stuff like that.
Well, there's some native grasses, prairie grasses that could work.
Uh huh.
And I'm trying to remember where this is located, the information on this, but I know there are some prairie-type grasses that have been used and are recommended for septic.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with those, too, you know.
You might take a look at those.
Okay, but other than that, you can't think of any grasses or anything, just regular lawn grasses that might grow better?
Want to try something that you don't have to mow would be the idea. It's kind of mounted up, right?
No, it's not mounded.
Oh, it's not mounted at all.
No. It's an older home, so we don't have a mound system, you know, or anything. So we have a yard back there to mow. So mowing is probably not a huge issue. It's just, you know, we just are just having trouble getting anything to grow on it.
It'd be a lot nicer if you didn't have to worry about mowing, and if you could plant some native plants in there that would just come up on their own. I think you
right. Yeah. We have tried that too, and it just has not made it.
Yeah, if you want to try grass, the one I would try would be chewings or hard or red fescue.
Red fescue.
Yeah.
Okay.
And really, I think the chewings and the hard are actually a little better than the red.
Chewings.
Yep.
Can you spell that for me?
Just like chewings.
Just like it says, huh?
Yeah. Chewings. Chewing.
All right, I brought that written down.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Christy and Amro, your turn. Hi, Christy.
Well, good morning. I have been frustrated because we live in an old town and we have one of the older homes and yards in the town. And when we first got here, it had been so neglected. And I've been working with a team of various people helping with getting the turf thickened and get rid of the weeds and things. But what has occurred is I have so many mushrooms and a variety of mushrooms, and I have a bit of a concern for animals. I've got a little dog, and I get, you know, you hear all these things about mushrooms and how toxic they can be. So I've gone around on my hands and knees picking out these mushrooms, thinking, oh God, you know, not that our dog has indicated any particular issue, but is there anything I can do or should do about these doggone mushrooms? And it's like every year now in the last 3 years, oh my goodness, it's either a new variety or a spreading of them.
Hmm. Sounds like, is it damp?
It can be. We have a lot of mature trees, like we've got some really like 200-year-old oaks and an old hickory, so we do have some shading, and it's sort of you know, spackled around because the branches and whatnot. And I think because of trimming and taking care of getting rid of bad parts of the trees, I think we have more sun than we did initially.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just maddening to try and go around and pick them all up.
Right. So you're on the right track. So changing the environmental conditions is going to help a little bit. I've never had experience with this, but the good news is we just hired a new extension specialist in plant pathology for turf grass. His name's Jim Kearns.
Uh-huh.
And his email is jpkearns, K-E-R-N-S.
Is K-E-A or is it K-E-R?
K-E-R-N-S at wisc.edu. And Jim, I know he can answer the question, and he's got a lot more knowledge in that area than I. So he can tell you how to get rid of them, I think, or what to do about it.
All right. Are you aware at all of whether or not any mushrooms that potentially do grow in a turf kind of area have a potential to be harmful to not only my pet, but I'm thinking other animals, even squirrels or dogs that might, you know, be walked along our sidewalk? You know, I would just hate to see anyone harmed.
I'm trying to think of the, you know, you could probably have somebody take a look at the mushrooms. There's probably some things like inky spots and puffballs that are not going to, Frank, you know, puffballs you could eat yourself.
Yeah. It's good to take caution with mushrooms.
It's always good to be cautious with them. And you're part of the state. I'm trying to think of mushrooms that might a little further north of you, there could be some mushrooms that would be more likely to cause problems. But if you could get somebody to identify the mushrooms, and frankly, if you got some good pictures, photos of the mushrooms, and you sent them in, we could probably get them identified for you.
That's a really good point. I know there were some. I mean, some of these I've never seen in my life, and we got some.
You have any
mulch? Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, are there any kind of brightish orange?
Not that I can tell. But I know in my mulch, and it's quite sunny there, there were some that came up that were really, I would say, probably about 6 inches tall and quite solidly like a stalk.
Round?
With a very long kind of head on them, elongated head. And they had kind of spots on them and everything. They were very strong odored, even just sitting there. And I got rid of those.
Did you see any Smurfs?
You know what? Take some pictures of those, Kirsty, and send them in, and we can get somebody to identify them for you. But it's typically moist and it's dark, and you're going to get mushrooms if it's moist and there's a lot of shade.
Lots of organic matter in the soil too. Yeah.
Doug, you coming back? Be with us again, I hope.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it very much. Doug Soldat, our guest, turfgrass urban soil scientist at the UW-Madison in the Department of Horticulture and the University of Wisconsin Extension. Our guest today, we'll have him back and we'll talk again. Sorry we didn't get to everyone. Monday, Peter Green of InfoStar talks personal computing issues. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.